So then starting with the chapter 2. Now maybe just a little, just a few words on the essays. When you write the essay, so please there is a question, then first just answer the question. Then you bring forth arguments and explanations from the chapter and from other sources you can add. Then you see its connection to your own application. So there should be seen some contemplation that you are thinking how to apply it. And if you put, then it's the best if you put your own realization from your own life, from somebody else's, how you actually see it. Even from Bhagavatam, you can, if you know some stories or anything, should be application of that principle in devotee's life. And then conclusion. Now, this essay should be 200 words. You can extend to 300, that's maximum. Please don't go above that, because then, again, it will be, less marked. You have to fit into the space you get. That's also part of the training. So try to not to extend beyond to what you have. There is a certain space, you have that. Try to express your idea, express what you want to do in that given space. Then that's the best. Okay. So we have chapter 2, the first stages of devotion. So what are the three categories of devotional service? Now, the three categories of devotional service, which Srila Rupa Goswami describes in Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, are listed as devotional service in practice, devotional service in ecstasy, and devotional service in pure love of Godhead. So, what is the difference? So, now we have then devotional service in practice. Then that's part of Sarana Bhakti. And as such, this is the recommended way how to begin devotional service. So then we have certain set of rules and regulations. We have our own sadhana. So based on that sadhana, we practice our various sadhana. What's the English for it?
Practice?
Practice, yeah. Sadhana. Routine. So, okay, giving example. Now, what does devotional service in practice means? That is that we have to get up in the morning. Now, getting up in the morning, now why do we get up in the morning? Well, so we can take bath, but taking bath is not the goal why we get up. The ultimate goal, because we go for Mangalarati. So that's part of our sadhana. Somebody told us we should go for Mangalarati. So we get up, we take bath, and we dress up, put on tilak, and then go for Mangalarati. Once after Mangalarati, then we have some time to chant our japa. Why do we chant japa? Well, it's part of our sadhana. So somebody tells us to do, we do. Our guru instructs us, chant 16 rounds of japa, daily. So that's our time. That's the best, Brahma Muhurta is the best time for chanting the japa. In fact, for anything. Japa is our most important activity of a day. So and then, after that darshanarati, after that breakfast, our service, our duties, what we do during the day, the lunch, no, afternoon services, and like that we get, we utilize our abilities throughout the day. This is our sadhana. So, as a part of this, then we progress. Now, what happens is that after some time, when we do our sadhana properly, then we will start to get attached to the activities while performing the sadhana bhakti. For example, we will not be getting up in the morning because we have to, otherwise somebody gets on our case. We will not take bath because we have to, and we may not go to the temple for Mangalarati because we have to, otherwise we will not be written in the book. It becomes spontaneous. We get up because we want to. We go for Mangalarati because we want to. We want to see Krishna. We will go for Darshanarati because we want to see Krishna. We will chant our japa because we want to chant japa, chant the holy name of the Lord. So then it becomes spontaneous. So, but this part of spontaneous devotional service is still part of sarana bhakti. So we do the spontaneously our activities, but still it's part of the sarana bhakti. And once we come above that, and that is the bhava bhakti, means in ecstasy, then rules and regulations don't apply. But it cannot be said that the devotees on platform of bhava bhakti or prema bhakti don't follow the rules. It's not that they are against the rules or they reject the rules. If there is if they remember and if they do, they do. But if they are so absorbed on in the service and they forget. You see the six Goswamis, sometimes they were so absorbed in the lila when they were writing the books or meditating, they forget to eat. And they don't think about it, they forget to sleep. They just forgot. Didn't happen. So, but then they are not claiming, because I didn't sleep last night, so then I have to sleep during the day. No, that's, I have to exchange it, that's how it works. They forget. They are not, whatever happened. So that's when the devotee gets into, ecstasy about serving Krishna. So we should not misunderstand the differences between, especially what sarana bhakti in practice and in spontaneous. What's the difference? So spontaneous doesn't mean that I drop everything and I start to just read about Krishna all day, as long as I want. But I'll be there exactly on time, and there's prasad on time. Hey, where is it? What happened? Why is late? So we should understand this is not bhava bhakti. The devotees on the level of bhava bhakti, they in fact do all the rules and regulations because they know that enhances them to be closer to Krishna. So they take it as a tool, as a medium, not as must, but as want. And so that's the difference. Okay, now how many qualities each of the categories have? So generally it is understood that in the category devotional service in practice there are two different qualities. Devotional service in ecstasy has four qualities, and devotional service in pure love of Godhead has six qualities. So we describe the first two. And how to classify a devotee?
Those first two,
okay, so then you have sarana bhakti in based on rules and regulations, and then you have sarana bhakti based on spontaneous devotional service. So those two are this is both sarana bhakti.
It doesn't refer to those six qualities mentioned in the text. Six aspects of service.
Well, see, this is the first one, okay? In practice, there are two different qualities. Okay? And the other one we will go as we go by, because now, first 14 chapters, actually, this is, describe the sarana bhakti based on rules and regulations. And 15 and 16 chapter then describes then sarana bhakti in spontaneous. Yeah. And sorry? Yeah, Raganuga. And then you have then 17, 18 chapter it's in ecstasy, bhava bhakti. In the 19th chapter, it's prema bhakti. It's in pure love of God. So each of them have categories how they break, different stages. So in the sarana bhakti, has two stages. Yes. Yeah. But seemingly, it doesn't look like there is no difference externally. It's still sarana bhakti, means we follow the sarana. It's, the difference is in the consciousness. Why do we follow the sarana? The first one is I have to, because somebody gets on my case. Because if I don't, I will be unhappy. But the attraction for Krishna is not necessarily so great. But then as we do, the affection and the attachment grows. So then what we do, we still follow the sarana, but now because we are getting attached to Krishna. So now it's because I want to follow, I see this path as something which takes me closer to Krishna. So I want to follow this. So this is Raganuga Sarana Bhakti. Yes.
Mentioned also in the Madhurya Kadambini that the qualities mentioned in the first chapter, which was listed six qualities of devotional service, are also accordingly related to the levels sadhana, bhava, and prema.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I can see also that this statement refers to this one, if I understand properly.
See, later on, as we go, I mean, there are four stages of bhava bhakti, which we are going to describe, as we said, in the chapter 17-18. And then prema bhakti, there are six stages of prema bhakti. So that we will discuss in the last stage. So this is just, they're basically the first stages of the devotion, how we define it. So like the definitions. So therefore, we don't have to really stop here right now, because what we are going to discuss, we are discussing sarana bhakti. So for us, important is to understand the actual meaning. What are we going to perform? How can we get engaged ourselves in Krishna service? So unless we are on the stage of ecstatic love or pure love, it's going to be sarana bhakti. So we have to utilize what we know from the acharyas, from our guru, from sadhu and from shastra, such a way so then we can go closer to Krishna. So over here, now the categories, you have the, for sarana bhakti there are two categories. That's Prabhupada's definition. Yeah, and then as we come then to bhava bhakti, we describe the four categories of bhava. And then in prema, then the six categories of prema. Yeah? Yes.
I had a question about, it says over here, Krishna consciousness cannot be aroused simply by practice. I don't know what that means.
Well, okay, what is the goal? Krishna consciousness, just if you practice, just going, like you practice to get up in the morning, you practice to take bath, no, that does not bring Krishna consciousness. This is just to, create the atmosphere. So if you have desire to become Krishna conscious, you can. See, you may have desire to be Krishna conscious, but if you don't get up in the morning, and then you sleep till 12 o'clock, it's very unlikely that you will really be that day Krishna conscious. So to get up in the morning, it's auspicious, but on its own, it's not Krishna conscious activity. Being vegetarian, it's beneficial for, so you can become Krishna conscious, but being vegetarian does not make you Krishna conscious. So if you practice these rules and regulations just for the sake of practicing them, you don't become Krishna conscious. So we have to know why we practice. Why do we follow four regulative principles? If somebody thinks that we follow four regulative principles just for the sake of following them, it's useless. But if it's understood that we follow the four regulative principles, so we may practice not forgetting Krishna at any time, then that's the right thing to do. Yes?
I was also thinking how it said, don't try and see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna wants to see you.
Mm-hmm.
So performing our sadhana, we're engaged in such a way that Krishna will want to see us. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. So, and how do we do that? By something which is pleasing to him. And what is pleasing to him? He writes he does certain things in his house, right? And he likes others to do that also because, he sees the best. This is what he considers the best. So if you want to really please somebody, so then why don't you do the thing which the person you want to please to sees the best. If you want to do something else, so then you have some other idea how to please him, and that may not be necessarily pleasing to him. So it's not important the consciousness which we develop. What do we want?
Yeah. Doesn't sarana bhakti include like chanting japa and
of course food? Yes, but sometimes, see, in the beginning the chanting japa must be it's done because your guru tells you have to chant 16 rounds a day, and when you finish 16 rounds put it on the side and okay, I'll finish my 16 rounds. So you did, but do you have a taste for chanting? Maybe not. But then, when you continue chanting, and when you continue the service, and then you see that Krishna is being pleased by devotees around are being pleased. So then, you may start to understand that because you are doing your sarana such a way, and maybe you chant more than 16 rounds whenever you have free time. So that makes actually the thing happen as they happen, that Krishna is being pleased, devotees are being pleased. So then that make you understand that yes, I should continue. That's the right path. So you start to get more attached to the process which you are doing. When you are more attached, then naturally you start to see, how can I do more? Maybe get up earlier in the morning. Chanting, no, early in the morning, it's so nice, so peaceful. You can fully focus. There was one devotee actually. Oh, who was it? He actually very rarely would go to sleep. He wouldn't even go to sleep. He would chant at night, and then in the morning or during the day he would do so many services.
Modern times?
No, during Prabhupada's times. And then, Who?
Jayananda?
Oh, maybe, yeah.
He was famous.
Yeah, maybe it was Jayananda. And then later on I heard that the devotees were getting, agitated over it because, he didn't sleep and this. So at least I heard that he used to put he put up his bed. And then, whenever he fell asleep, then just he would anyway go and chant. It was also instance when Prabhupada visited some temple, and there was some devotee, pujari, and he was cooking and he was doing service for the deities and other services also. And when Prabhupada asked him, "So okay, so how is your service?" "Yeah, I'm doing so many things." "Oh, that's nice." And then how many rounds do you chant? I have no time to chant rounds. Prabhupada said, "That's not good." And he said that he gets up early in the morning. Prabhupada said, maybe you should get up earlier. So we should not mistaken also the other services for the main one, which is the japa. And then the most important. So then we should always stick to it and find the time how we chant, when we chant, because that's the process which elevates us. The other processes which assist to this process, so then they engage our mentality, they engage whatever the conditioning we have, so then it becomes auspicious. So then we are capable of being peaceful, being feeling that we are utilized properly, we can do things. But on its own, it's not the main process. We should not mistaken that. Like the devotee in Jagannath Puri, and he used to carry the whole life water for Jagannath, but he never saw Jagannath. So when he was dying, then he didn't know even how Jagannath looks like, and he didn't go back to Jagannath. So that's... Yes?
There are some instances when Prabhupada sanctioned the devotees not chanting their rounds for some service. Can you explain maybe the principle behind those incidents?
Yeah, okay, there was one who was, there was one devotee who was giving massage to Prabhupada every morning, and he wouldn't go for Mangalarati. Everybody has to go, but he doesn't have to go. So now, why is that? You see, then those devotees, they, by Prabhupada's observation, so they, even though they wouldn't go for Mangalarati, they were on Mangalarati. You see, there was an instance, I think it was Yamuna Mataji. Once she was cooking prasad, but Prabhupada was observing how she cooks. And when she cooks, no, she was so Krishna conscious, she was so absorbed in Krishna, that now Prabhupada had mentioned that, well, this doesn't have to be offered. No, that's already offered. No, Krishna, no, already, no, has taken, no, while you are cooking. But that's, it's individuals. So we have to be, see, this is our disease. We hear one thing and we want to immediately apply it, no, as a general thing. Because we feel that discrimination is, no, we should not discriminate. If it applies for one, then it must be for everybody. That's democracy. But that's not like that. Everybody's on a different level. So we follow the sadhana Prabhupada gave us, because this is best for us. Now, if Prabhupada says that no, somebody no, doesn't need to go for Mangalarati, and he can perform other service, which no, it happens, it's no problem for the devotee. If you actually are doing not some service for Vaishnavas, or you are doing, say like preparing for a festival, you are not attending the Mangalarati, but you are preparing something else, you are Krishna conscious, and you are not thinking of Krishna, you are on the Mangalarati. But if your reason for not going for Mangalarati is that you want to sleep, or you want to just do something else, then you are not on Mangalarati. Now, there was also an instance of, I've heard about, and maybe, I don't know if anybody else heard, I would like to know the more the reference of it, that one devotee came to Srila Prabhupada, and he asked, if he can marry second wife. And then Srila Prabhupada said yes. And Mahavira was kind of, you know, astonished. And then, okay, so he went. After the devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, now, what is this? Why is he allowed to marry second wife? I mean, we don't allow polygamy. So why, no, why him? And then Srila Prabhupada, he explained that, see, the devotee, he is very agitated. He needs to get married, he will marry the second wife anyway, and he didn't come to ask me. He basically came to only inform that he is going to marry the second wife. So if I would say no, anyway he would get married. But in that case, he will go against his guru's instruction. Now, if I say yes, okay, so it's something which, no, it's extraordinary. It's nothing which applies for anybody else. But at least he follows Guru's instructions, so he will not fall down spiritually. Materially, yes, no. Try to have two wives, right? So therefore, things don't apply in general. Discrimination, it's a natural propensity of an intelligence. So to say that we should not discriminate, this is a statement of not person who is very intelligent. Everybody needs no different approach. Everybody needs different facility. everybody takes different responsibilities, but only to achieve the same goal. Now, you cannot say that, I mean, it would be nice that everybody just fits into one box and everybody is dealt with the same way and everybody becomes the same. But it never existed. Nobody ever could achieve anything like that. And it will not be possible. Just simply because everybody has different mentality, different conditioning. So everybody needs different approach. So for that reason, then you have the Vedic education, which stresses this very point. And you approach the student individually, based on his needs. Then the student also sees, well, if he is capable of staying as a brahmachari, he stays in the brahmachari ashram. If not, then he enters the grihastha ashram and goes to grihastha ashram. But the goal of the education, as we discussed before, is the realization. And how to achieve the realization, that's individual. But the realization, it's common. The realization, it's Krishna for everybody. That's the top. It's like you want to go to Delhi, and then somebody goes by car, somebody goes by train, somebody may fly, somebody may walk. Takes a different time. But if you have the right direction, and if you follow the right advice, you will get there. And once you are there, then what does it matter? How did you get there? You went through, okay, if you walk, it takes a long time. But then you will get a lot of realizations on the way. If you fly, it takes only a couple of hours. Okay, so you slept on the way and then, alright, but you get different realizations. But once you are there, then what's the point of going to the past and then lamenting, oh, why I didn't take this or why not that? We have to be able to see how to live in presence. So we have a lifetime in front of us. And it's short. It's quite short. So compared to what we are already in the material world, it's nothing. It's just a moment. So why don't we rather thinking that, oh, why I should do this, and that, and everything together, and then I don't know what I'm supposed to do. So why don't we rather ask what is the best for us and stick to that, just for a moment. We benefit the most. So that's the meaning of the discrimination, to find out what is the best for us. With the proper discrimination, then you find out that following Guru Sadhu Shastra, that's the best. But not according to our own ideas, but actually based on Guru's ideas. Then we can get farther. Otherwise we don't.
His disciples were not chanting 64 rounds, but were engaged in preaching or meditating. He saw them actually chanting.
Yes. That's, see, when the devotees get onto the spontaneous level, or when they get onto the ecstatic level, you may not see them with beads. And then from your point of view, they are not chanting. But those devotees, they are fully absorbed in the japa day and night. So from our material point of view, we may say that they are not doing their sadhana. But actually, they are fully absorbed and they are chanting. They are chanting more than we can even imagine they are. No, that's like once Prabhupada was coming to Mayapur, and he was coming by Chaitanya Math. And then when he came, then after he was criticized by his own god brothers that he didn't stop and to see samadhi of his guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. And his reply was, his guru is in his heart, so he always takes darshan of his guru. So sometimes, no, devotee like Srila Prabhupada, just to show us. So okay, no, he stops, he takes darshan, but it's not that he's really obliged to. He's permanently now situated in Radha Krishna Leela. So his guru, his deities, they are always in his heart and he is always in their presence. But just for our sake, sometimes he stops and he does things like when he was on Kumbh Mela. So it was cold and then devotees were hesitating, taking bath in the morning in the cold river. So for Prabhupada at the age, it's extremely difficult to, it's painful. So, but anyway, just to show examples, so then, he also went and took bath, just to encourage others. Krishna and Balaram, they didn't have to go to Gurukul, but to encourage others, to show what is the right thing to do. How do you gain knowledge? What is the proper way? Then they went to Gurukul. So many examples like that are there. So you have the devotees on they are on Uttama platform. They don't have to do these things, but they do. And if they do, then we should be very grateful, because they are for our own sake, for our benefit. Otherwise, you have devotees like Shukadev Goswami, right? He walks naked and only if it's Srimad Bhagavatam he talks. But if you want to discuss something else, he will not waste time. So whom will you go to discuss your conditioned mind? You have to have some compassionate devotee who will spend his time, his energy, and who will show you how to purify the conditioned mind to become on that level of Paramahamsa. Somebody who shows you the path of devotional service. Now in the temple, we are discussing Bharat Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj. Conditioned soul, right? Advanced, but conditioned soul. 5-year-old wants, gets upset, so he wants great material opulence. But because he's so determined, so his guru, Narad Muni, then he gives him a process by which he becomes purified. And after that, he doesn't want any of this. The only thing he wants is devotion. And what did he do? He just gave him process of devotional service. Nothing else. And the Dhruva Maharaj, because of the circumstances, he just took it very seriously and succeeded. And every one of us, we have the same opportunity. The devotional service is being distributed, is being given freely. But are we taking it? Are we taking it the way it's being given, or we are taking it the way we are conditioned? We take what we want, and we leave what we don't want. That's the question. So, if we understand this point, then we can understand what is our engagement. Yeah? Yes.
So, why is japa given more importance than kirtan for a personal advancement? Why is it more important?
Well, you see, yes? Oh, why is japa given more importance than to a kirtan? Okay, now, kirtan is very, no, it's a japa. And in fact, as a process, no, it's successful, no, you chant the holy name, others hear it. So, that's the best process. So you engage yourself in kirtan, in harinam, no, the best way then you can. But during that harinam, then also do other activities. So you may engage yourself in the process and realize Krishna. There was one instance in Ambika Kalna. No, there are brothers, Suryadas Pandit
and Gauridas
Pandit. And I don't know, probably all of you saw the deities of Gornitai. And there is a whole story behind which we may see later. The whole point was the devotees were singing very nice kirtan on the bank of Ganga, and there were ladies on the altar alone. Nobody was in the temple, so they actually ran off the temple and they came into the kirtan. So they were also dancing and singing, in the kirtan. So that's it's a very excellent way how we can engage ourselves. But if you can do kirtan, the whole day as a service, like say 24-hour kirtan, if you can do, it's a great opportunity. But as a process, as a part of sarana bhakti, then as a process of initiation, then you also give your guru, you give promise or a vow that you will be chanting 16 rounds of japa. So japa, it's more quiet. It's not meant for necessarily others to hear. It may be a little bit loud, so you hear it. But japa is in a mood of meditation. So you are trying to engage as many of the senses in the japa. Hearing, then touch. You can even imagine seeing the Maha Mantra in your mind. So as many senses as possible, so then the mind gets captured. So, and based on that meditation, you are just hearing yourself the Maha Mantra. So the process is the same, the Shravana. But depending on the our conditioning. Somebody, for example, cannot sit for too long and concentrate. So somebody walks while chanting japa. Right? Somebody stands. No, somebody sits. So what is the most comfortable position so then you can actually fully absorb yourself in the chanting of the holy name? Now, kirtan, you can absorb, but there are so many distractions also during kirtan. So one may meditate during kirtan, but it's, am I playing the mridanga properly? Or what tune should I sing? Or, no, distractions are there. So then when you are absorbed in the kirtan, it's a great process, but still you should fulfill your vow, the 16 rounds of the japa every day. So you should find the time for chanting the japa, and you can do it early in the morning. Because, no, anyway, Harinam or loud kirtan, no, in the morning, some may appreciate, they will, some may not. So keep the japa for the morning, and then the rest of the day you can do Harinam. That's the best. Yeah?
So if we are absorbed in the kirtan, does that mean the thoughts of whether we are playing mridanga properly or what tune to sing, that we will not think like that?
If you are absorbed in the holy name, then you are not really, no, you are not, you don't have to think about how you're playing the mridanga. But you have to be expert in the mridanga, no, to be able kind of like to forget what you do. That's why practice, like practice makes perfect. And then when you are absorbed, now Krishna can guide you. If you are surrendered to Krishna, Krishna will guide you. He will just make you play now as you are supposed to. Many devotees now could not speak well, but now when they surrender to Krishna, Krishna even appeared in front of them, and then suddenly they spoke a very eloquent language and composed so many shlokas, so many, you know, prayers for the Lord, which they didn't know that they are capable of. This is the gift of Krishna. By His mercy, then we are capable of doing anything. We just have to have faith that Krishna can do that. As long as we think that whatever we don't learn, whatever we don't know, really make sure that we deserve, then only we can do it. As long as we are, you know, on that platform, then we will not be able to actually understand how we should do things. Draupadi, she was being disrobed on the assembly, and then she was holding on her sari, thinking, I will protect myself. And Krishna could not help her. He was waiting. Krishna could not help Draupadi because she was ready to help herself. When she understood that she cannot do anything, now these kshatriyas, they are stronger than I am, I can do anything. Then she raised the hand and prayed to Krishna. I cannot do anything. Please, Krishna, protect me. Then Krishna supplied the unlimited sari. But until then? So we are in the same position. Due to our false ego, we are thinking that I can do this. I am a good singer. I can sing. I don't need Krishna for that. I am a good cook. I can cook. I don't need Krishna. I'm a good musician. I can play. I don't need him. As long as we are thinking this way, then yes. No? It's our own ability. but it will not get much better. But when we have, when you surrender to Krishna, then you can fully realize what it is. You see, there was what are we talking about, no? Haridas Shastri and Tansen. Maybe not. Anyway, Tansen is a disciple of Haridas Shastri. Tansen sings for Akbar, and Haridas Shastri for the deities. Now, so Akbar want to hear Haridas Shastri because he told Tansen, "You are the greatest musician. I don't know anybody now who sings better than you. My guru sings much better than I. How is that? Because he doesn't sing for people. He doesn't sing for mortals. He sings only for the deities. So he's not showing off. He's not using them. So and then he wanted to see him actually how he sings. But he said, Tansen said, no, he's not going to sing in front of you. He's not like that. He will just not. So he said, is there some way how we can make him sing so I can hear? And then, okay, then there was a way how he would sing. But when he saw actually, Haridas Shastri singing, then he understood there is no comparison between Tansen and Haridas Shastri. So that's we are talking about perfection. See, like a 99%, we achieve something to 99%, so it seems like that's perfection. But within that one last percent, so there are so many levels of perfection. And then it can be 99.999 and you are not perfect. There is still things to improve. Look at this. Out of 19 chapters, 16 are Sarana Bhakti. 2 are Bhava, 1 is Prema. Why is that? 2 get us out of the condition takes 16 chapters. And to actually, once you are out of the conditioning, then to show you the right path takes 3 chapters and short ones. So the whole process of Sarana Bhakti is how to go back. But the main thing is how to get detached. So we have to get rid of our conditioning by attaching ourselves to Krishna. So that's the problem. Yeah. Okay. So and here
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama